Hello. Okay. Actually, this is the first time I've been up here teaching since like last September. So it's been a while. I've had a baby since then, in case you didn't know. So that was kind of a lot of work. Okay. So today, as you know, Dave has asked us to give a talk on whatever we wanted, just whatever my heart wanted me to share. And something that we wish that we had learned in high school. So my talk today is called Enduring Faith in Culture. How many of you have ever set a goal for yourself? Everyone. Yes, we've all done that, right? Like, especially at New Year's. It comes to the new year and you're like, this is it. I am going to run every day. I'm going to get all those 10 three-pointers every day. I'm going to read my Bible every day. I'm going to journal. Like, it's going to happen, right? But then reality sets in, and it never happens. You get sick, you're tired, you're busy, or maybe you just forget, or you just don't want to do it anymore, right? This happens with goals. That is the reality of what happens. And this can happen in our faith as well. We go to church camp, we go to Impact, we go to Connect Weekend, and we just get on fire, right? You're so excited. You're like, this is it. I'm going to have faith. I'm going to be on fire. I'm going to follow God. Like, I'm going to do this. But then again, then you go back to the real world, and you realize this is not always the cool, fun thing to do. And so it gets hard. It gets hard to actually spend time with God. It gets hard to make those choices that go against other people. It's hard to talk about God with other people sometimes. It can feel awkward. We've all been there. It's work to keep up your faith. So the real question is how do we live out a faith that endures the culture when we feel like everything is against us sometimes? So first, let's look at the lies that the culture tells us. So first side is perfection and identity. And so some of you might believe the lie that you do feel like everything has to be perfectly together. Your hair, your makeup, your clothes, or maybe the right shoes, right? Maybe it's the cup that everyone has. Is it the Stanley now, or is it the Owala? What is it? Owala? Yes, it's Owala now. Okay, my daughter, who's in fifth grade, was like, I need an Owala cup. And I was like, are we going to start this? I guess we are. No, I refuse. No, or maybe it's the newest iPhone. Like, you need the best, right? You need the newest thing. Or don't let people see your flaws. Don't let them see mistakes. Like, you need to have it all together. So this is your identity, right? Like, your importance is in you having these things, or you having this look, or having the right clothes or friends, right? Or maybe the certain sport that you're in. But you only matter if you have these things. And we set this standard for ourselves that the world is telling us that we need. But it's so pointless because those things don't last. Everyone changes their mind, and then all of a sudden, you don't have the thing anymore, right? It's not going to be an Owala. It's going to be a, I don't know, Tervis, maybe. Somebody was talking about a Tervis the other day. Actually, when I was in college, it was a Nalgene. Did any of you have those? They're kind of, I don't really like those, but those were the things. You needed a Nalgene bottle and you needed Chacos. And I actually had neither, but because I didn't like either one. But those are what you needed, right? But it's so crazy because why? Why do we feel like we need to have this stuff when you're already loved and accepted by Christ? Why do we feel like we need to have all these extra things too? God doesn't look at the extra things. He doesn't look at how many followers you have. He looks at your heart. In 1 Samuel 16, it says, the Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. You are already chosen. You're already accepted. He is your identity, so we should find the freedom. We don't need things plus Jesus. We just need Jesus. Someone once told me that you are the person that thinks of yourself the most. So we can tend to be a little self-centered, right? Or we all think about ourselves. But we can think that everyone in this room is thinking about you. Like, I could be over here worrying that you're looking at my gray hairs right now, because I do have a few. Now I see heads popping up. I do have a lot, actually. I could be stressing about it, but you know what? You're not. If you noticed it, you thought about it for like 10 seconds, and then you're over it, right? Because it doesn't matter. So I could be stressing about that, but how ridiculous is that? Don't talk about my gray hairs, Hannah. I see you. I'm just kidding. It's so pointless, right? Nobody is thinking about you. They're most likely thinking about themselves. Now, I'm not accusing of us of all always just thinking about ourselves, but the point that I'm saying is that we are way more concerned about what other people think about us than is necessary. Because not only is it pointless and it's exhausting and it's unhealthy for us to worry about that, but they're probably not focusing on you as much as you think they are. They're focusing on other things, probably themselves. So we have to work to not be enslaved by this identity that the world tells us we should have. And it's an effort to be comfortable in the identity that Christ has set before you and be comfortable in him. So that brings me to the other side of the pendulum, which is you do you. Y'all heard that. So if you aren't over here listening to the lies saying, like, you need to be perfect, you need to have it all together, this is your identity, instead you might be over here hearing, like, you do you. Follow your heart. Be your own self. You know, find your true person, whatever. Guys, our hearts are deceitful. I mean, Jeremiah 17, it says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. While your feelings are very real, our feelings are real, sometimes it's not always telling us the truth of the matter. So the world tells us that if you feel different in this group over here, then that must mean you fall into this group over here. If you don't always feel like you fit in, or if you have a different sense of humor, that must mean you need to be someone else. Have you ever seen the movie Luca, the Disney movie? I actually didn't like it. I don't know why. I have a picture of it. So he's this sea monster, right, that really wants to go on land. And apparently sea monsters, when they are dry, they turn into humans. Bet you didn't know that, right? So this guy just doesn't feel like he fits in the water. He doesn't like the water as much. He wants to go onto land. And his parents don't understand him. They don't understand why he would want to go onto land. And they just want him to be safe. So they forbid him from going over there. And what does he do? He goes over there. And so he goes on to land and runs away from home. And in the end, you know, he finds his true self and finds that he really was meant to be human. This is who he was all along. And his parents see their flaw and realize, you're right, you should have run away and done this. But I think this sums up what culture tells us today. Movies have romanticized this idea about following your heart. Luca felt called to the land, and his parents said no, and he went for it anyway, and they saw this is what he was meant to be, right? And so now for us going on land, this, you know, it's kind of silly. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but it is a big deal when following your heart leads you somewhere that God has not said is good or true or goes against his beautiful design for us. That's when it becomes idolatry in us thinking that we know better than God, which is just laughable. So we're all going to feel out of place at some point in our life. Every single one of you have felt out of place at some point, right? That is life. We're all unique and different. You're not going to fit into every group, and that's okay. That doesn't mean you're messed up or you should be a different person. So yes, we should embrace our uniqueness and individuality that God has created you to be, but ask yourselves, who is that person? It does not mean changing yourself to try and fit in. It does not mean sin or going against what God says is true and right. It means recognizing that God made you specifically in his image, in the unique person that he has made you, and you can find your identity in him because we are all his children. So we all have different gifts and talents and quirks and personalities. But sin is never a defining characteristic for you. Sin has entered the world and distorted our desires. And so we need to recognize that for what it is. We need to recognize us belonging to Christ and seeking after him. Is this a desire to be a unique, to be your personality? Or is this a desire to follow after something that is not good for you? So now back to the original question, though. How do we have faith that endures the culture when it feels like it's against you? And the obvious answer is Jesus. Yes, I'm done here. So I'm going to talk about Hebrews 12:1 because it's my absolute favorite verse, and I know I bring it up a lot. I'm sorry. It's happening. Okay, Hebrews 12, it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, Let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Now, I always stop here, but if you keep going, look what it says. It says, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not resisted to the point of shedding your blood. So consider Jesus. The author is trying to encourage us to say, endure in your faith. Like, don't grow weary, don't grow tired of living out faith, but think about all that Jesus went through. I mean, he went through way more than any of us will go through most of us in our life, right? I mean, he endured the ultimate suffering that was just so unjust. He was beaten, mocked, scorned, outcasted, and then killed. All of the things, but it says he went through all of it for the joy that was set before him. He knew faith on earth would be hard, and yet he also knew it would be worth it because of the joy of being with the Father on the other end of it. Do you know what the word endure means? Endure. It means to suffer patiently or withstand with courage. You know something is hard, and you keep pushing through it. So I think any time I've heard the word endurance, I just think of, like, running and being able to, like, run a long time and not collapse. Which, I mean, sure. But if you think about running long distances or running in general, it is hard. It's hard on your body, but it's also hard on your mindset because you want to stop the whole time and you have to keep telling yourself, you can do it. Go one more mile. Get to that corner. I can do 5 more minutes. You have to push through it and tell yourself, I can go a little bit further, just a little bit further. So when they say running endurance, that means you can push yourself to go further. And so we too need to persevere in our faith. But here's the thing, is it important enough to you to do that? Is our faith important enough? You're not going to stick with something unless it's actually important to you, right? Just like those goals we talked about. Is your faith worth it? Do you actually trust that God has your best interest in mind when he asks you to live a life that sometimes goes against our culture, when it makes it difficult? So it's been a while since I talked about my first triathlon. I'm sorry if you've heard it before. I think it's been a long time. So my sister-in-law got me to do a triathlon. It's like a beginner triathlon, so it's not like amazing. It's like an easy baby triathlon at a resort for women, and at the end you get coffee and quiche. So I was like, sign me up. I love breakfast food. So I was like, okay, sure, I'll do a triathlon. And I found my bike in my garage that I hadn't ridden in years. I was like, okay, cool, I don't have to buy a bike. So I trained, did all the things. It went great. Rode my bike at my house. I swam. I, you know, did all the things. Then I got to the race, and which is at the Hyatt Resort in Bastrop, if you've ever been there. So there's a lot of hills there. I mean, like, hills. Guys, have y'all been in this neighborhood, you know, by St. Francis, like that Episcopal, you know, that giant, giant hill that they call Suicide Hill? Yeah, think about those hills, a lot of those hills. And you would have to go on this road, and you have to go through all the hills, and then you have to turn around to get back to the hotel. So I had to do those hills twice. Okay, so started my race. Everything went fine. Swim went great, sure. I got on my bike, and I got to the first hill, and my bike would not go up this hill. I mean, would not. It was like going through molasses. Like, I was biking like this, trying as hard as I could, and it would not go up the first hill, which was not the biggest hill. It was awful. There was actually one point where I got off and walked, but other people were walking that one too because that hill was awful. But I mean, I could have walked faster, probably the whole thing. And I'm telling you, every single person in that race passed me, every single one, which I was not going to try and, like, be first place, but, you know, I just wanted to, like, do the race. There were 10-year-olds in this race that were passing me, and they were like, on your left. And then there were grandmas passing me that were like, on your left. And then there was even one older lady that passed me and was like, oh, you can do it. Keep going. I was like, how slow do I look? My goodness. I mean, it was ridiculous. Actually, I have a video that perfectly sums it up. Let's watch this video.
On your left. On your left.
On my left. Got it. Don't say it. Don't you say
it. On your left.
Come on!
Okay.
Need a medic?
That was my race. If I heard on your left one more time, I was about to like throw down the bike and just start walking the race because I was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, not only is it kind of embarrassing, but it was just frustrating. Like I had tried really hard and I know I'm not an amazing athlete. I've never proclaimed to be, but like no one's that slow, right? Okay, come to find out, this bike that I had pulled out of my garage was my bike from middle school. It was a youth-sized mountain bike. Guys. You would have thought, I mean, it didn't even register to me that I was like, oh, hey, I had this bike in middle school. Maybe I'm a little bit bigger now. I don't know. Hey, go back to that video, that picture of me with the bike. You can even tell. Look at it. It's a kid bike. And not only that, but it's a mountain bike. So if you know anything about different bikes, mountain bikes are meant for mountain biking on rough terrain. The wheels, the tires are supposed to be, they're like bigger and rougher. They're meant to go over rocks and rough terrain. There's lower air pressure. It's specifically meant to do that. And so it actually goes slower on the road. It wasn't just me. Oh my goodness. It's really slower than normal bikes. I mean, I'm also probably slow. But I was so mad when I found that out. Yes. But it did make me feel just a little bit better. But my point to all of this is that even though I rode the wrong bike and it made me 10 times slower, I still finished the race. I was determined to see this through, not just because of my quiche and coffee that I got at the end, but I was determined because I had made this commitment to finish this. I had spent all of the hours of riding my bike in the neighborhood, of going swimming and running and doing all of this, and it was worth it to me. Even that bike made it worth it to me because of the achievement that I got at the end. I accomplished something that I never thought I would accomplish. And if you knew me 5 years ago, you would know I could not run to like past that wall. I mean, seriously, not a runner. So it was just the achievement of it. It was worth it. All of the pain and frustration and embarrassment was worth it. Living a life of faith is hard. Our culture pushes against us at every minute and tells you you're wrong. It tells you you should have taken the easier way. It says, no, you should follow your heart. You should do this instead. You know better than God. But listen, we have to live with the end in mind. Live with the bigger picture. What are you striving for ultimately? And do your daily decisions point you in that direction? Is it more important for you to get to do something fun for a few minutes, even though it might be harmful to you? Or is it better for you to be patient and wait because you know ultimately you have something so much better coming? Is a life with Christ worth it? A life striving after him, putting your identity in who he says you are. If we know what our goal is and we believe that Christ is the treasure more than any fleeting temptation, then it's easier to choose the path that God has called you to. That doesn't mean the path will be easy, but it makes it more manageable because you know that the journey is worth it and you know what's coming on the other side. Some of you got to meet Quinn at camp. I have a picture. Oh, thanks. I just had to show her off because she's so cute. I just stare at her all day. She's going to be like 8 months now. She's adorable. So you probably don't know this, but taking care of babies is hard. You will find out one day when you're a parent, but oh my goodness, it is exhausting. And it is so much, so much work, mostly because they need you day and night for eating, sleeping, and pooping. I mean, all the things for their survival. They need you. And so it is so much work. And this little cutie doesn't sleep. It's super fun. I just drink a lot of caffeine every day. But it is worth it. It's so, so worth it for the relationship. I was rocking her in the middle of the night, last night, again, and I was thinking, you know what? I don't care. It's worth it. Because I get to see her grow up, and I get to have a relationship with her. Like all the late nights, any of the hassle or the struggle, it is worth it to me. And so think about that with your relationship with God. It is worth it to have the relationship. Any struggle that you might go through, God has never promised life would be easy. He told his disciples specifically, like, the world is going to hate you because of my name. But it is worth it. And these trials that we are taken through only strengthen our faith. But we just have to see it through. So how do we persevere in our faith? You just do it. Okay, go with me on this. Just like the Nike check, this is how they, like, motivate people to reach your goals. Okay, the other day I was telling my husband, Ben, that I was having a really hard time getting to read my Bible because I would always read it in the mornings. That was, like, my time. I absolutely love waking up and starting my day reading the Bible. I highly recommend it. It, like, totally changes my mindset for the whole day. So that's always what I've done. But now with a baby, I have not had that time. And she wakes up in the night, so I'm too tired to wake up in the mornings before. Anyways, you can keep him. I love baby noises. He's the best. So I was telling Ben, I was like, okay, I just can't find the time to read my Bible. Like, I'm too tired in the mornings. And then by the time I put her down, it's like 7. It's like, I'm just tired, and I don't want to read my Bible at night. And he, you know what his advice was? Well, just do it. I was like, thanks, Ben. That's really nice advice. Just do it. I scoffed in his face, yes. And then I told the senior girls about it. I was like, this is ridiculous. But you know what? I actually was thinking about it afterwards. And I was like, it's not bad advice. It kind of has a point. Sometimes you just have to do it, okay? If it is important enough to you, you will do it. Do you want to know how many fictional books I've read this year? I'm not going to tell you. Do you want to know how many books of the Bible I've read this year? Also not going to tell you. I'm too convicted. Okay? Somehow I found the energy to read the fun books. Sure did. But somehow I don't have the energy to read the Bible? Ouch. So isn't that the point of enduring something, though? That you do it even though it's hard or even though you don't feel like it? I may not always feel like reading my Bible. I may not always have the energy, but because I have the bigger picture in mind, it is worth it to me to have that relationship with the Creator. So sometimes I just have to do it anyway. I make time for it because there is time in there somewhere, right? So, and I've seen from personal experience that even if I'm not excited about it, once I keep doing it and I get back into the habit, God gives me that excitement and that joy and that love of spending time with him, because the more I spend time with him, the more I grow and get to know him, and then the more I'm excited to spend time with him, right? Kind of like any friendship. The more you know a person, the more excited you are to hang out with them, hopefully, right? So think back to that Hebrews verse, the let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. So to have a faith that endures the culture, we must set our eyes on Jesus. Not letting the world tell us our truths, but letting the one who is the creator and who is the ultimate truth, let him define. Let him guide your steps. Spend time with him so that you know him and his will. And if you want to follow him in an opposing culture, then just do it. Okay, I'm going to pray, and then we can break out. God, I thank you so much that you are a loving God who stands there with us, Lord, even when we don't feel like having a relationship with you, God. You are still there, always there for us. And I pray that we would choose you over and over again, just like you have already chosen us. Lord, I pray that we would learn how to have a strong faith despite what the culture says, Lord. We thank you so much in Jesus' name. Amen. All right.